So that changes our focus a bit. I think traditional rate regulation, you kind of, people tend to understand what that's about. That's a 100-year-old concept. What we do for the new market stuff, I think we have some guideposts at the PUC and have for a while, and I think Bill and I share them. And that's generally to, when I'm making, when something new comes along, say a battery or some piece of distributed generation, and we have to figure out, this is happening more and more now. How does this fit into our market? What kind of market rules as a matter of policy should we have to accommodate this new technology? The way we think about that, I think, is threefold. One is try to fit it as much on the market side as possible. So you've got the rate-regulated wires, you've got this robust market. To the extent you can, have that new thing earn revenue from the market and have to participate in the market and compete there instead of earning a regulated rate of return, because this was the reason we deregulated to begin with. Second is to make sure there are no barriers of entry for that new technology. It's an important role we play. There's a lot of people making money there now, and there's a tendency even among the people acting in the best faith to try to pull up the ladders. And so we try very hard to make sure there are no barriers to entry. And relatedly, to stay technology neutral. And I think it's a really important, you'll hear that a lot from regulators and ERCOT, that we try to make market rules without any specific technology in mind. And some people get a little annoyed by that, depending on where you stand. In this room, for instance, you might hear that and think, that's terrible policy. We should be shutting down the dinosaur coal plants, and you should be putting a thumb on the scale in favor of renewables. But, my answer to that would be twofold. One is, the proof is in the pudding. There's a ton of renewables in Texas, as I'm sure we'll talk about. And two, you should think of that policy as both a sword and a shield, because technology neutrality helps renewables, I think, more than it hurts them. It is important. I can go to any legislator in Texas and say, we're not going to pick winners and losers. We're going to trust the market, and renewables compete in that market and win. And so, technology neutrality is a good thing, I would submit to you, if you're in favor of renewables in Texas. Anyway, that's sort of my PUC overview. I'll kick it to Bill to let him talk a bit about ERCOT.
Okay. Thanks, Arthur, and I appreciate y'all having me here. I used to really enjoy the UTCLE. I think they do a great job with it. I now have this fantastic status in Texas, and the bar has allowed me to be a lawyer. Call myself a lawyer, but I don't have to take CLE. I actually have a lawyer now. People ask me, like, you're general counsel. What's the difference between being the general counsel and being the CEO? And I'm not sure I know yet, but my favorite story about it I will share with you this morning. There was a large American corporation. I will not say what it was. But I heard this story from somebody involved, and they had a big problem. Someone was suing them, and they were probably going to lose. The large American corporation was. They didn't feel like they had a very good chance, and it was big dollars, big impact on the company. And so everybody gathered, and they were going to have a meeting with their CEO and the general counsel and the public relations people and the engineers, and what are we going to do? What are we going to tell them? What's our recommendation? And so they finally got to it, and the CEO walks in, and the general counsel says, "Sir, I hate to tell you this, but we've looked at this from every angle, and there is no way that we're going to prevail in this lawsuit. We're just going to have to face the fact that it's going to be extremely difficult for the company, and that's what I have to tell you about this today." And the CEO goes, "Okay, well, lose slowly," and then walked out. I love that. ERCOT as it exists today, and just I heard about Illinois CLE. If you are not a person from Texas or ERCOT, just to give you a real quick summary, ERCOT's three things. ERCOT is an actual physical location on a map. It's about 75% of the landmass of Texas. That's about 90% of the population of Texas. The far eastern edge, the far western edge, and the tip top of Texas are not in ERCOT, but most of it is. The reason for that is that ERCOT is made up of utilities that are connected only to one another and don't have interstate connections. Utilities like Entergy, formerly Gulf States, and Far East Texas were already connected into Louisiana or other states. And so when ERCOT was formed, if you had an interstate connection, you couldn't participate, because the central function of ERCOT was, we are going to have intrastate jurisdiction. So when Arthur talks about the singularity of purpose of one regulator, that's a very important piece of this. And so that, it's a physical place, it's a market, When Texas restructured electricity in SB 7, the ERCOT area, the ERCOT region, was subject to the massive changes that they made in the market that set up these lanes of utilities and generators, retail electric providers, Arthur described. That goes on within this region that's, you know, covers 90% of Texas. And we manage the market. We manage the grid. We're sort of the air traffic control for the grid, where there's dispatch of the, you know, all of the generation in the ERCOT region on the transmission system is done by at our control center. So we're sort of air traffic control at one end of the building, and then at the other end of the building, we do settlements. We're more like a stock exchange. We have congestion revenue rights auctions for, you know, financial instruments to manage congestion. And we are the overall accountant for all of the transactions in the market that run through ERCOT. And the third thing we are is the company who does all that, ERCOT Inc. And we are headquartered out in Taylor, Texas, and have, you know, a number of different operations. But when you look at it, ERCOT's now over 700 people. And before SB 7 passed, I think ERCOT had topped out at 5 people. ERCOT did not have a lot of functions. It was a fairly straightforward way of, you know, the electricity that had to be transferred between monopoly utilities, between the Houston Lighting and Power and Texas Utilities. ERCOT handled those transactions, but that wasn't a really big job.